WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
John Updike didn't want to leave the story of Harry Rabbit Angstrom unfinished. With the fourth Rabbit novel, Rabbit at Rest, Updike completes the series and completes the story of an American life. Each of the Rabbit novels are set in the last year of the decade, beginning with Rabbit Run in 1959. When we meet Rabbit, he's in his late 20s, a former high school basketball star living in a small Pennsylvania town. He's dissatisfied with life, alienated from his wife and child. As the books progress, Rabbit inherits his late father-in-law's car dealership. He's prosperous. He has extramarital affairs. But he's still dissatisfied. He remains alienated in 1989 in the final novel. He's overweight, 55 years old, and living in retirement half the year in Florida. His heart is bad. He's losing his drive. His life is running down. And he's in debt because his son has been stealing money from the family car dealership to feed his coke habit. Like Rabbit, Updike is from a small town in Pennsylvania, but the author has led a very different life from his character. Yet the Rabbit novels are marvelously detailed. I asked Updike how he knows so much about Rabbit.
He's not so different from me. He's about my age, so that's easy. And I know about Pennsylvania and the details of how to run the car dealership I tried to work up in the preceding novel, although there isn't an awful lot of that kind of detail here. The rest is a matter of faith, really. You construct these dolls, and then you throw yourself at them and hope that they'll walk and talk and that you'll be able to know what goes on in their heads. And I've never had trouble making Harry do things or having access to what seems to be a very busy mind of his. He's always reflecting and seeing and making remarks to himself, and in that sense, he's a very responsive character.
There are very detailed descriptions of heart procedures like angioplasty in your book. How was your health during the writing of this book? The character Rabbit is constantly experiencing chest pains, even from the first page. Were you undergoing anything of the sort yourself?
Well, I think my chest has always been one of my weak points, and I did have chest pains. I found that they ceased, though, once I stopped writing the book. The book kind of weighed on my chest, and I had to, as they say, get it off my chest. So, yeah, I felt kind of frail and squeezed. He also talks about that feeling of being squeezed. But that's very Rabbit-like, isn't it? I mean, life itself squeezes him in ways he doesn't like, and his whole exertion is to get away from the squeeze of circumstances. Yeah, but in answer to your question, I felt slightly under the weather while I was writing this book, but nothing drastic. I went to the doctor, and he said it was all in my mind, or that I was, considering how old I was in pretty good shape.
I want you to read a scene in which Rabbit is undergoing the procedure of angioplasty.
I will try to read this very complex scene. It's already happening when we begin the reading, and the doctors, I guess, are self-explanatory. Another double cross. They shave him down beside his privates without warning where the catheter will go in. They give him a pill to make him light in the head, and then when he's helpless on the operating table, under all these lights, they scrape away at the right half of his groin area and pubic bush. He's never had much body hair and wonders if at his age it will ever grow back. The needle that follows feels bigger and meaner than the Novocaine needle the dentist uses. It's pinch. Dr. Raymond murmurs, "Now you'll feel a pinch." Doesn't let go as quickly. But then there's no pain. Just an agony of mounting urinary pressure as the dyes build up in his system, injected repeatedly with a hot surge like his chest is being cooked in a microwave. Jesus. He closes his eyes a few times to pray, but it feels like a wrong occasion. There's too much crowding in of the actual material world. No old wispy biblical God would dare interfere. The one religious consolation he clings to through his 3.5-hour ordeal is a belief that Dr. Raymond, with his desert tan and long melancholy nose and bearish pack of fat across his shoulders, is Jewish. Harry has this Gentile prejudice that Jews do everything a little better than other people. Something about all those generations crouched over the Torah and watch repair tables. They aren't as distracted as other persuasions. They don't expect to have as much fun. They stay off booze and dope and have a weakness only if that history of Hollywood he once read can be trusted for broads.
The reason why I asked you to read this section is that I think it kind of illustrates in a way that as Rabbit is approaching his death, nothing is ever particularly profound for him. Do you know what I mean? He's going through the details of life. He still maintains all of his prejudices. He still is very alienated from his family. He's still cheating on his diet and cheating on his wife. And he's looking death in the face, and it's still that way. And you know, a lot of times in literature, death is a is a time for great revelation,
solemn
and profundity.
Occasion, usually,
yeah.
Isn't it?
And revelation and profundity, which doesn't happen to Rabbit.
Well, gosh, maybe a more profound author would have made his dying more profound. But my guess is that physical decline, which doesn't have to be named as death. I mean, you know, there's that in us which refuses to face death, even though we're right on our deathbed. There's that in us which knows only yes, and yes, I'm alive. I thought for a man of this sort, and indeed for men and women of all sorts, dying is just one more phase of living, and that we do it with the same equipment that we lived with. And if your brain is trivial, it'll keep on being trivial right to the end.
Rabbit is a surprisingly complex character in a way. I mean, we're always reading what's going on in his mind, but in a lot of ways, he's not a very likable character. He's very prejudiced against gays, against people of certain religions and ethnic groups. He cheats on his wife. He has an affair with his daughter-in-law in the book and feels absolutely no remorse about it and can't see why anybody else is getting so upset about it. Do you get a lot of grief for that, people assuming that you're crude yourself and that you have no feelings?
Some of the reviews seem to suggest that Harry's thoughts are my thoughts, which isn't quite the case. As to his prejudices, I think he's kind of working on them. It is true he has these thoughts, but he doesn't really act on them, and I think that the 30 years that we've known Harry, he's learned quite a lot about acceptance, and you certainly see your normal life brings you into contact with a greater variety of people ethnically than it used to. So he's trying to grow and adjust, to give him credit. As to the he isn't much given to guilt and remorse. No, it's true. I think that though in this book his wife sort of has the upper hand. So anything he does that hurts her is mitigated by the fact that he feels she's basically winning. She is more alive than he as the book goes on.
What have you ended in your own writing career and in your own inner life by ending the Rabbit series?
It's basically the connection to Pennsylvania. I was a native Pennsylvanian and really very much a Pennsylvanian until I went off to college in New England at the age of 18. And at first, the connection was very powerful. I was homesick, and nothing seemed real to me except a shoe fly pie and sauerkraut. And but I've been a New Englander now for many years, and one by one, my contacts with Pennsylvania have lessened, and my mother's death this last year was the final reason I had to visit Pennsylvania. So suddenly, I'm without a real reason to go there, and it seemed to me I could see this coming, and was one of the things that made me want to make this the last before my Pennsylvania becomes entirely fantastic and entirely nostalgic.
Is it an end of a period stylistically for you as well?
It's the end, I think, of the old present tense novels. I've enjoyed picking up that, by the way. I found when I began to write in the present tense what fun it is, how it glides along, and certain kinds of things it excludes. So in a way, you must be more concrete, in a sense, than with the historical past. And I'll miss the present tense, although many younger writers have taken it up now, so I don't feel the present tense is in danger of withering away. But it kind of cleans the desk, and I feel a sort of blank ahead of me that I'm anxious to start filling.
You've said that you see Rabbit at Rest as a depressed book about a depressed man, written by a depressed man. What were you depressed about while writing it?
I'm getting depressed about that sentence, actually.
Because it's been quoted so much?
Well, I've seen it quite a lot.
Yeah.
But it was true enough. I did say it. It was at this speech I gave, and it sort of popped into my head, and it seemed true enough. It was a kind of uphill book. Maybe all books are more uphill than we remember. It's a little like childbirth. You tend to erase the pain and just enjoy the the product. But as I was writing it, I was aware that this man, not much happens to him, and he's tired. He's tired of living. Maybe I'm tired of writing. A certain tiredness seemed to creep in, and that was all right, I thought, because this is, after all, late middle age novel, and maybe the author's mood and the mood of the prose should reflect the mood of the main character. But I was not displeased when I finally finished, and even more pleased when I could deliver the finished manuscript to Knopf and start thinking about something else.
One last question. Are you going to miss Harry Engstrom?
Oh, I kind of miss him already. Thing about a character in a book, though, he's sort of always there, isn't he? I will miss having in my future one more rabbit novel, but I think it is time I began to concentrate on some other kind of novel and began to write it, in fact.
Do you know what that will be?
Only very vaguely. I think it'll be first person, though. I seem to like first person novels, although in a way that's a cop-out because you are stuck then with the voice and the character, but... And I'd like this novel to be shorter than this and a little more antic, a little shorter paragraphs.
Well, John Updike, thank you very much.
Thank you.